You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show, rated the number one podcast of all time.
Of all time. Make sure you're ready, because this is the podcast where you are guaranteed to learn virtually everything. Well, today's podcast is brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is domain management made simple. It is the easiest and quickest way to buy a domain name. If you've ever registered a domain, you know that companies just try to upsell you with stuff you don't need or that should be included in the domain. Hover is honest. It never tries to upsell you at checkout. Everything the other guys extra charge for is included in the cost of your domain, like Whois privacy and domain forwarding. And plus, Hover has the best customer support in the industry. They have a no-hold phone policy. That means if you run into a problem, you call Hover and a real live human being answers the phone, ladies and gentlemen. I actually get excited. It's just so rare, right? So basically, it takes the hassle out of getting a domain. That is what they are selling. You just type in a few keywords you want in the search box, and it'll tell you what's available. And the cool thing is they specialize in .NET. So a lot of times you want something in .com or .org. It's not available. Try .NET. That is their specialty. And Hover has valet transfers. What does that mean? Well, if you've got a domain somewhere else, they'll take care of the whole process of moving the domain to Hover for you. All right. So they specialize in .NET and they now offer Google Apps. You can get Gmail, Calendar, Drive, Docs, the whole package. You got 25 gigabytes of storage. And, you know, Google's a huge company. Let's be honest. Hard to get a hold of a real person, I'm sure. But Hover has a human being that specializes in Google Apps. So if you got a business, you got a family, you got a group, you want the ability to share all kinds of stuff with, try Hover.com. See how it works. They'll give you a 30-day free trial with the Google Apps as well. So, you know, see what you think. And the best part, guess what? If you go to Hover.com/Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, well, that's a promo code that gets you 10% off a new domain name. Oh, man, the power I have to get you 10% off. Thank you, Hover. This is the Brian Callen Show. Do you call your show the Bill Burr Show?
No, I don't.
Yeah, because I didn't know. I blame Rogan.
Listen, it's okay. It's okay if you don't listen to it.
Listen, your podcast is huge.
It isn't.
You do it alone.
It isn't. And you know what? I'm the only guy who's honest about his podcast.
Well, don't
everybody
you do really
says,
well?
Everybody says, dude, I got like 9 million downloads. Yeah, I'm number one on iTunes. Everybody's number one on iTunes. It's like when you go to a community college, they try to figure out what the fuck they're number one in. The number one, number two pencil fucking history class in the Neponset Valley area.
Why do you do a podcast?
Ah, look at this. I got to take this off and take off the helmet.
There you go.
Why do I do a podcast? All right, now you sound like you listen to it. Why are you doing that?
No.
I don't know why. I just started doing it. I was over Bobby Kelly's apartment, and he goes, hey, you know, people are starting to do these things, and I didn't know what it was. And it was like literally a 20-second podcast. I was like, hey, what's up, everybody? I'm going to start doing these things. And
yeah.
And just it was like building a stand-up act.
You have something to say. You know, one thing I'll say about you, I don't even know you well, but I'll tell you this, that I think it's very interesting. You have now become very successful as a stand-up comic and all that. But what's interesting about
I have my own line of mic stands coming out.
The Burr. The 300X.
Yeah, you can adjust it with one hand now. For years, I don't know why they haven't had that.
You don't have to hold one down.
Yeah, it leaves you your other hand free.
Did you design it in your workshop?
Yeah, I did.
But you
met
did
some
this.
Guys in NASA.
I remember you know, I've never heard anything, but you're kind of one of those comics that other comics talk about in very glowing terms, including Joe Rogan, including all the tastemakers. And, you know, you did this. You've been doing stand-up. You just showed me the list of cities you've hit this year. I mean, you're a workhorse. You've got 3 one-hour specials under your belt. You were on Breaking Bad. But what's interesting is I don't even know you, and I you're synonymous with not to blow smoke up your ass, but you really are, for me, synonymous. I was talking to Rogan about this. With integrity and with humor, being very fucking funny.
You've never talked to any women in my life, but go ahead.
Exactly.
I'm very good at my job.
You make me feel good, though, about the state of affairs. And I was like, one thing about Rogan was he was talking about you as he walked away. He goes,
Guy's fucking just a humble dude. You know, you're also painfully funny. I saw your set the other night. I haven't seen a lot of your stand-up, man. We've been in the same circles a little bit, but I
don't. Dude, you're doing movies. I mean, you're in contact with world leaders.
I don't have time for a kid from Boston.
You don't have time for me.
With red hair. That red hair is obviously a dye job, and it looks great on you.
You know, it is. Why would you dye something that's leaving you? It's like fixing up a car that doesn't run. You're going to sit there and paint it?
I agree, man. You have to start letting go of your vanity. I haven't, though. I work out all the time. And you went hiking today.
Yes, I did.
Which explains your well-developed, the frontal part of your legs, which I even through your jeans, I can tell.
Yeah, I noticed you staring at my crotch area.
You have a great body.
I enjoyed it.
You got long legs and broad shoulders.
I do.
You have a good frame.
I have a twinkle in my eye. Christmas, 24/7.
How'd you grow up? Big family?
Yes.
Yeah. Youngest?
Middle. It was in the middle.
And was it a surprise to you that you were funny?
Everybody was funny. Everybody was funny in my family, and everybody was funny in my town. Everybody was funny in my state. Everybody was just funny.
I went to high school in Massachusetts, so I know
I hung
out
with just everybody was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
My friends that I went out drinking with were fucking hilarious. The people we then met as we went to different colleges and failed miserably, most of us.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to a number. I finished at, I almost said Aspen. I finished at Emerson.
Oh, that's not bad.
I landed on my feet.
Did you study literature?
With a math requirement was adding fractions, and everybody was like, I can't deal with it, man. All of my friends were fucking hilarious. Like, I was sort of like trying to keep up with them. Unfortunately, a number of them have passed away, unfortunately. But
is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
No, it's just awful.
Were you working class?
Was I?
Yeah, blue collar.
I had this weird upbringing. My parents are both white collar professionals, but we grew up in this blue collar town, and for a number of years lived in like a split family, whatever you call it. Like,
what town?
We had the. I'm not going to give all of this stuff up.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus Christ, there's too many psychos out there. You're literally making that red dot hover right over my parents' house.
I know what you mean by that, though. That is scary.
Yeah, it gets weird. Yeah. I did a gig. That's why I kind of pulled back a little bit on the podcast about as far as like divulging stuff, because I was in Stockholm, Sweden doing a gig. I go, yeah, I got a dog. And this guy in the back goes, Cleo, like yelled out the name of it. And it
Jesus, it
was cool. And it freaked me out. And I was just like, and I have no one to blame but myself. But sometimes you just don't realize it as you're sitting there talking that you're putting all this shit out.
I took a picture. I guess I had my locations thing on. Some kid sent me a Google shot of my house with my red Prius, because I talk about my Rogan makes fun of me for driving a Prius.
Don't you love that car?
The best. I now have.
You know what
it's Passat.
Like? It's like a friend that never wants anything. You know what I mean? Never asked you to move.
So true.
It's just fucking.
I
actually got in that car today, and as I was backing it out, because I've been thinking about, oh, get something flashy, whatever. And I was backing it out, and I got in the car and it started right off. I was like, I fucking love this car.
Listen, Rogan told me, he goes, you have some money. Buy yourself a Shelby, a Cobra or something. I'm like, listen, that car is so easy for me to drive. I never have to get out of it and fill it with gas. And I don't give a shit. And by the way, I got Barcelona red. The car salesman, the guy was like, don't you want a more manly color? I was like, no, I'm going to call this the Red Ram. And it's my red fucking Prius. It's a dishwasher with wheels on it. I love it. Now I have a Passat turbo diesel. Only because it's safer.
I want to get that Tesla. A buddy of mine just bought the sedan one that looks like more like a Lexus looking car.
Yeah,
dude, it's one of the fastest cars I've ever been in. Granted, we're getting out of Priuses, but I have driven Corvettes. Just so people know, it was unbelievable how fast that thing is, and you can drive from San Diego right up to the border of Canada.
Yeah,
and they're working on going across the country. So you can just charge it, and then you charge it for free.
Unbelievable.
It's just nobody. So the first thing I asked, I said, does the owner of that company have major security? And he goes, yes, he does. I would not be leaving the fucking house. I mean, you're messing with blue blood money.
That's right.
You're messing with people who profit off of war.
That's
and he had like three of the five things that took out Kennedy. You know what I mean? Like, he's already to that. Like, the convertible top is already halfway down.
Elon Musk is his name.
Is that the guy?
Yeah. He's a South African guy.
Dude, I cannot
safer
say
safer than any car on the road, except for the only problem is three of them have caught fire when they hit the wrong bump because they got a lithium ion battery underneath.
But this is my question though: is I would have to look that up, because electric cars notoriously, once they start catching on, all of a sudden there's these rumors that come out. Like a long time ago, like take it out of that, just gas combustion engines. The Suzuki Samurai was like the college kid's Jeep, and they could afford it, and you could put your friends in. Remember that? Remember those commercials? You
don't have them
where they go, wee, they just go up, they'd show the cars going around the racetrack, and they would just go up the little hill going, wee, right? Yeah. Like, it's fun for everyone. So they were killing it, and they were killing the Jeep, and then all of a sudden there was this rumor that they were they tipped over at 5 miles an hour and kids were getting crushed, so parents were just like, you're not buying that. And then
I remember
that traced
very,
it back.
Well. Was that not true?
Allegedly, it came from the makers of Jeep.
Really?
The Jeep, yeah. Oh, come on, it's a brutal game.
You know what, man?
It's a brutal game out there.
We had these authors on the podcast who wrote a book called The Merchants of Doubt, which was that what they found was
now
that
what do these authors do?
They basically are journalists who wrote about they took a look at the science
these
behind climate change.
Yeah. I've heard about those.
You're not a reader.
I'm not a
Bill's
reader.
Bill's a liver. He's not a reader. I love that. Did you read that book?
I go with my gut.
That's the greatest line in Cyrano de Bergerac. He goes, "Sir, have you read Don Quixote?" And he goes, "Sir, I've practically lived it."
Yeah.
It's my favorite. That's my favorite. Some people tell me if I ask me if I wrote a book. But she kind of traced the people that were denying, the scientists that were denying that cigarette smoke caused cancer, were essentially nuclear physicists, weren't even biologists. And then the same guys they hired for to deny that the ozone layer and acid rain and now global warming are the same scientists. And these guys aren't so much science. They're not scientists. They're not credible climatologists or biologists. What they are, though, is that they have an ideology, which is a free market ideology.
They have a lab coat.
They got a lab coat.
They put
they
that
were
on,
nuclear
you go
physicists.
On TV. Yeah.
It's not the area. And these two journalists kind of traced how industry hires the same scientists over and over to create false rumors.
Right.
And it's a pretty devastating book.
And none of that is remotely shocking in my world, and that's the kind of thing that if you bring up to people, they go, "Oh, are you one of them conspiracy theorists?"
No. And what but kills see, it is me, shocking to me.
But what kills me about the average individual out there that believes in the deal, okay, is they're not even in touch with how much they lie in like an hourly basis.
Yeah.
How many fucking times you're spinning what the fuck you just did in trying to get responsibility off you, justifying the piece of shit behavior that you have. And I'm as guilty as anybody. So,
you're not, though. No,
so
you're not, though.
Oh, yes, I am.
But see,
I am.
But wait,
don't you dare
don't
say
you dare.
That I'm not. These people at the top, dude, they're not these evil shapeshifters. They're just us with a ridiculous amount of fucking power.
I agree with
and you. And you can't.
I agree 100%.
My analogy is always, you take the average dude, he's fucking fine and everything. You make him a bouncer at a club, and he can all of a sudden decide who gets in and who doesn't.
That's right.
And
soldiers talk
instantly
about that.
You ramp it up a little bit, and you get to that, that banker level. I mean, you're just sitting there, you know.
It's all about incentive structure. It's a human beings. This guy wrote an article about when he was kind of a pacifist, and then he had a machine gun in his hand. He was from another country, and he joined this army, and he had a machine gun. He said it just changed his whole point of view. He'd walk in, and people were afraid of his machine gun, and he had power, and he started getting kind of addicted to that power.
That feeling.
I think all of us, I think that's a very good point. However, I do think as an adult,
it's a lot more comforting point to say, like, they're just like me. They're just a little out of, they need a timeout.
Well,
as opposed to they're evil and they want to farm me and put microchips in me.
There's that saying, when a system turns good people corrupt, or when the only way to get ahead is by behaving corruptly, even though you might be a good person, that's when you know you have a huge problem.
Yeah.
What they should do is
have some sort of test that, without you realizing it, if you're going to go for a powerful position, is they should put you in a situation to see how you behave. And if you don't come off like you're going to handle it and do the right thing, because not all politicians are bad people, not all bankers are bad, not every cop's a racist,
right.
And like this, it's just they're in like this. It's the Lance Armstrong thing. Lance Armstrong, what he did in his sport, that sport was so fucking corrupt. He's basically guilty of going to jail and making a shank.
That's right.
Now, you're not supposed to have a shank, but you're not going to fucking survive.
Right.
So in that sport, it's like,
but
from
there's
top
a difference.
To bottom, everybody was doping.
Here's my problem with Lance Armstrong.
And I say that having never ridden a bike outside of Massachusetts.
No, but there is a fundamental difference. Lance Armstrong's a piece of shit, in my opinion, not because he cheated at biking the way everybody does. My problem with him is that people who accused him of it under oath, he went after and tried to destroy with lawsuits and everything else.
That's that
lawyers.
Competitive side.
He's a fucking...
He can't turn it off.
I got nothing for that guy. And he's so intensely disliked, he'll be in court the rest of his life. But
he'd come in here and you'd ask him to autograph your Speedos.
I would. I'm a bitch. The minute if I saw him in real life, I'd kiss ass. I'm a huge kiss
You'd ask
kiss
him
ass.
How he stays in shape. You would.
I get people on my podcast.
Dude, I got to tell you this right now. Mm. That fucking guy won that thing 7 times. I don't give a shit what you say.
It's true.
Everybody was doping, so... It's like the 04 Red Sox versus the 04 Yankees.
Great. Listen.
It's our roided up guys beat your roided up guys. It was a fucking level playing field. Go
great,
fuck yourself.
Dude, great biker. Great biker. Like you said, you can be an asshole in real life, but you might be really good. You might be a shitty husband, but a great politician. And one doesn't count. It doesn't mean that he's not a great biker. It does mean he's a shitty person if he goes after people like that. My issue is that as you get to a certain age, you do know what's right and wrong.
Yeah, but this is the thing, though. You've never existed in that stratosphere.
Oh, people say that bullshit. I don't buy it.
Yeah.
You can't. That's
How many
not an
bike
excuse.
Races have you won? Metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
In your life.
Have you seen my 1 hour?
Huh? Have you?
Have you seen? I'll take my shirt off. I'm built like a biker. I'll take my shirt off right now.
I'm just saying, it's so fucking easy to sit there and be like, oh, what a piece of shit. Did you ever see that documentary when they had all those people winning the lottery and just how much it messed up? There was this guy, he was working at like a Home Depot, this big schleppy fucking, just no game whatsoever, married family man.
Right.
All of a sudden he makes all this money and the fucking hottie at work starts throwing him looks and everything. He didn't know how to handle it. He starts fucking banging her.
I love it.
No, this is going to end bad. He starts banging her. And his wife finds out. He fucking leaves her. Leaves her wife. They break up. And then he's with her, but only for like a week, 10 days he's with her. And then he's like, what the fuck am I doing? He calls his wife. I fucked up. I want you back and everything. And she's like, no. And hangs up on him. And then she goes, oh, what am I doing? I love the guy. So she's driving over there.
He kills himself.
Calling him. Yes.
He kills himself.
By the time she gets over there, he killed himself. He fucked his whole life up.
But you know.
That sounds like an urban myth. That sounds like an old lady story.
That's something that where he got thrown a bunch of candy and he'd never had candy before. That's when somebody freaks out in the moment. Look, let's take you.
Oh
let's bring
You're
it right back.
You're going to sit there and turn this lottery winner into a fucking hero. And you're going to say that Lance, like, what was his frame of fucking reference for winning the Tour de France?
Here's the difference.
Because he beat his brother down the driveway one day, and he got a fudgicle?
Listen, victory and
I'm just
going
to say, for the rest
successful.
Of this podcast, I'm disgusted at you, but go ahead.
I'm disgusted.
I'm sitting here in protest.
I saved your message, by the way. It was very funny about that. But no, here's my thing. You become, let's bring it back to Bill Burr. You become very successful. You are. You have. You're making lots of money. You're one of the best comics in the country. All this stuff. All the accolades. You're on Breaking Bad. You haven't changed. You haven't turned into an asshole at all. You're exactly the same as you were.
If you had any idea what my inner thoughts were right now. Dude, stop putting me up
you
on
cannot,
a pedestal.
Yeah,
right?
I'm doing so. I'm not the one who does. Everybody does.
My whole fuck. Yeah, exactly. And you guys are all going to be horrifically disappointed.
No, you've earned it. You've earned becoming one of the best comics in the world. You have. By working your ass off, by being smart and doing the right thing.
Here comes
and
the right
everybody
hook.
Likes you.
Here comes the right hook. He's just setting me up, just peppering me with the jabs.
That's it. Just cut to Bill, just doing lines in the bathroom. Just a mess. But, you know, what I'm saying is that, no, I don't buy that you can be very successful and turn into an asshole. And, oh, you don't know what it's like. No. Lots of people deal with tremendous pressure
but
and are champions
minute,
and
wait
they
a minute,
stay
wait
and
a minute.
Stay
you know what I just didn't realize? Because I fucking can't stand compliments
What's
because
that?
Of the way I grew up. Is I just realized you were trying to compare my fucking going, hey, what's the deal with the president to winning the Tour de France 7 times in a row? Sheryl Crow's not calling me.
Okay? She should be.
I don't
she
have anybody. You
You're
know?
A handsome kid.
So, no, this guy, I'm not justifying any behavior here. What I'm saying is until you've fucking ridden on a bicycle in Paris after coming out of the mountains, no hands on it, drinking your energy drink.
With my hands in the air.
With your little tight shirt unzipped.
You're right.
Feeling that French air on your fucking shaved chest.
With all that testosterone.
You have
through
no
my body.
Idea. You have no idea what it's like to be that man. So that's what I say. I'm not condoning, but I'm not going to sit here.
You're not going
to
judge a man because you haven't walked in his shoes. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, all of these. And also because of all the piece of shit fucking things I've done in my life. I have.
Me too.
Yes.
I'm a degenerate.
Exactly.
I say that to people. You know,
but you're not on a bicycle, so you can judge the degenerate on the bicycle.
No,
how dare you,
no,
Brian Callen?
No,
how
here's
dare
the
you?
Fundamental difference. Let me give you an example.
If I didn't believe in this precious water here, I'd throw it right in your face.
Here's the difference. If I bang a lot of, let's say I'm married, and I bang a lot of girls behind my wife's back, my girlfriend's back. Okay, that's one thing. Now you could say, well, you know, he's got candy thrown at him all day. You don't know the kind of women that come after him. He's got a certain, you know, he's like, they take a pro athlete. You don't know what LeBron James deals with on a daily basis. Yes, he's married, but he's got tens throwing up themselves at him 24/7. You deal with that. Okay, now here's the fundamental difference. Ready? He gives one of those girls chlamydia, gonorrhea, or syphilis, and that disease can render that woman barren. She can actually have complications. She'll never be able to have kids. Now, if he doesn't tell that woman that he gave her chlamydia or gonorrhea, that's where he becomes an asshole, because he's hurting somebody else. That's where I draw the line. If you fuck around and you're doing steroids and stuff and somebody's under oath and they say, did you or did you not do drugs with Lance Armstrong? The guy is pressured into saying, I did, otherwise I'm going to go to jail. I'll perjure myself. And Lance Armstrong now hires a bunch of lawyers and comes after you and tries to destroy and does destroy your reputation in your life. That's where I go, Lance, you're not an asshole because you fucking took steroids. You're an asshole because you tried to destroy somebody for telling the truth.
All right,
about
but
you.
This is my problem with that. Mm. You're looking at it very one-dimensional, okay. Like Lance created the world, okay? There was so many people, Nike and all those fucking people, who fanned themselves after all this shit came out.
Right.
Okay? God knows, you know, do you think that they've discovered it when you found out? They knew what was going on. The
right,
second Brian Callen,
of course not.
They knew. And how much money did they continue making? How much money did they make? Did they give any of the money back? People made fucking
millions.
Billions
yeah.
off of that guy. That guy was a world famous athlete. He also raised like $500 million for cancer research. There's people walking around alive because of that guy. Mm. And it's like, what that guy? Okay. And also, all right. Here's the deal, dude. You join a joke writing team, okay? And,
never.
You know, for a whatever. Just say you do,
yeah.
And then there's the talk show host that you're all writing for, and you go in there and you find out that they're stealing jokes and what they're doing is unethical.
Right.
Now, is it just the host's fault? What about you? Where are you at some point where you go like, hey, I didn't get into this job to do this? Like, I just love how he's the only fucking guy who's being held to this moral standard where everybody on his team is a fucking victim. They're big boys. He said, listen, you want to do this, you
of
have
course.
To dope. You could easily say,
of
well,
course.
I'm not fucking doing that.
Of course,
that.
But
I don't want to make it by stealing jokes. And if I had to do that, then fuck it. I'll
guess what? You wouldn't do that. Bill Burr wouldn't do that.
You
might be a dirtbag like I am in some ways, but you wouldn't do that.
Okay.
Would you? I know you wouldn't. I don't even know you, but I know you wouldn't.
I wouldn't do that, but there's a bunch of other shit that I have done. Mm. I'm like you, dude. My fucking female track record is horrific.
Oh, my God.
It's horrific.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, the amount of people that I've hurt in that aspect of my life, and just because I'm this...
I wish one just, tear
and
just come.
And just because I'm good at this one thing,
sure.
Then all of a sudden, he's honorable, he has integrity, he's cleaning the ocean. It's like, no, you're looking at me through a very... Fuck, you're looking through one blind of the window, and that's all you're seeing, and you're defining me as that, and that's why I'm saying you're going to be fucking disappointed. Mm. Trust me.
Listen, we are all flawed. We're all flawed.
So fucking get off the guy. He rode a bike. It got out of control, and, you know, he came up. It's going to be a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
All right? And someday he'll be able to redeem himself like Travolta after he did those baby talking movies.
Mm.
So he has his Pulp Fiction coming up.
So you're basically saying the pressures were so great that you're not going to criticize me.
No, what I'm saying is that when you're talking about some of the best athletes in the world, like you're talking about this level of competitiveness mm-hmm. that sometimes, like, you know,
creeps into everything.
They can't shut it
they
off.
They can't shut it off.
They can't shut it off. And it's something that, like, dude, there's so much shit that I did in my 20s and 30s, and now that I come out the other side, that I now look back on going, like,
yep.
I thought I was 100% right.
Yep.
Not only was I not right, I was 100% wrong, and I owe about 15 people. I have, like, two more seasons of My Name is Earl. I could
know.
Pitch them.
You know, I...
Okay?
It's
it's like, you're talking about a guy, he came into that sport in his 20s. You're talking about a guy who fucking, you know, lost a... bald to cancer, he's facing death, whatever, and it's just like he knows how short life is, and he gets in, he's like, fuck this, I gotta make this dream happen, and he shows up in the Thunderdome that it already was,
yeah.
And they're like, this is how the game's played, so he picked up a shank and he started sticking people. Okay, I'm not condoning any of
I'm not gonna sit here and act like I have no fucking idea.
No,
the proverbial shank is taking steroids. My problem is you start destroying other people's lives deliberately, you're a piece of shit.
Hey, listen, why don't you fucking email the guy on Twitter?
No, but when you talk about...
I'm exhausted trying to defend this man that neither one of us know. Okay?
We don't care. Here's the bottom line. You're right. When I had a girlfriend who showed me a short film, and I dated her 10 years before, showed me a short film, and I watched it, and it was great. And I realized that it's about her on a date with a guy. And I realized that the guy who's a douchebag, I mean a fucking guy who I wanted to punch in the face, he was literally talking exactly the way I did to her.
Yeah.
And it didn't dawn on me until halfway through the film.
That
and I
right
went,
there is what makes females so amazing.
Amazing. The and fact I called that her and apologized.
She could sit there for 10 years. Dude, it's like The Count of Monte Cristo. You ever read that book?
Course,
how fucking long
course.
He sits
he
there
back.
To plot his revenge.
Yeah.
Like, that's just a book. That guy didn't
Dude,
exist.
That's right.
Women fucking...
She did it.
10 years later, and then
I said I was wrong.
Greatest thing ever, probably presented it as this gift. You probably had, you know, flowers in your eyes going, oh, wow, maybe, and you're probably in your dicks going, maybe one more time. And all that type of shit. And then she just catches you
right there with a left.
That fucking sandbag.
With a left.
Yep, and you felt like Pacquiao in the last fight.
I sure did. I fell with my hands in my lap on my face.
Yep, like a toddler.
Oh.
Not aware of its hands yet.
I called her up. I said, listen, I can't believe I referred to you as a thoroughbred. I'm a scumbag. I mean, the guy looked like me.
Wait a minute. What's wrong with that?
It's just the way I said it. I was like, I was giving her advice on diet. I mean, I was just a douchebag. If I could go back now and just
like
meet myself.
Are you like a date rapist personal trainer?
No, I wasn't.
Frat boy
trainer? No, I wasn't muscular enough. I was just a shithead who thought I was right. I just thought I was right about everything.
Right.
I thought I'd figured it out. And I look back, I just needed me to go back now and slap my face with an open hand for about 20 minutes, or just punch myself in the stomach. Good.
Yeah.
And hard.
In between each slap, you got to pepper with, no, you're still not getting it. As you talk to your 20-year-old self, who's going to argue? My 20-something-year-old self would literally argue with the 45-year-old me.
Of course it would.
It's like, dude, I'm you.
What
I'm
would you,
you
say to yourself?
Nah, you're not seeing it.
What would you say to yourself? I mean, what were the mistakes?
Oh, I would be like, dude, you know how many great women you're going to miss out on because you're angry? And
wow.
Anger scares women away.
Yeah.
And attracts damaged people. Oh, dude, what is this, fucking Oprah?
No, I'm curious.
What do you think? You've talked to enough comics. You know, basically.
You're different. You're not a regular guy.
Haven't you seen enough overlap in both of us in our flaws? What is this episode's going to be called?
I love it.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Well, you have a shitload of fans, and a lot of people look up to you, man, and that's a fact. Young people, young guys. I mean, and so you know, I don't know if we have anything to teach. That's for sure. It's, you know, you learn through experience, but you know, I find myself looking back on my life and thinking about what the fuck I would do. I don't know if I learn any other way than being a fucking douchebag.
I think your 20s and 30s is basically, you're basically taking your childhood out on the world.
Yeah.
And then hopefully somewhere around 33 to 35, this is basically how it happened for me, you start to be like, oh, wait a second. And then the next frustrating 7 years is just sort of watching yourself like, oh, here I am in this situation again. Oh, I said that again. I'm doing that. It's almost like you can't even control because it's this
pattern recognition.
It's this worn-in groove.
Yeah.
And you just fall into it like rainwater, just going right down the spout. And I'm still at that point now where I'm really trying to, like yesterday, I was watching the Patriots game, and we were losing to the Carolina. We were winning.
Cam Newton's the real deal.
And they were coming. Oh yeah, because he won a regular season game against a tattered defense.
Can you explain to me?
He had his comeback.
Can you explain to me that?
Does anybody crown somebody a king more than ESPN in the regular season?
I know.
How many crowns do they have in that walk-in closet? But he's the real deal.
Explain to me that last call, that PI, the guy tackled. He tackled.
This is why. Because someone not involved in that offense stepped in and picked off the ball. So behind.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't. I mean, the one thing that I would say is that offense was happening beforehand.
Okay.
But I got to be honest with you, with the balance of penalties so shifted into the receiver's favor, I actually like the call, and I'm a Patriots fan. I think that, you know, they used to say, you know, hitting the curveball was the most difficult thing in professional sports.
Yeah.
I would say now covering a receiver.
No doubt.
And
guys,
the guy in the 49ers, I mean, that he made a Lawrence Taylor play. They needed a big play. He came in. Yeah. He sacked the quarterback, caused a fumble, fell on the ball, game over. He didn't hit him in the head. He wasn't targeting a defenseless player. And now it's just like, oh, he tackled him too hard. He got him in the neck area too hard. And I understand it, because that watching Tony Dorsett struggling
so sad.
Was breaking my heart to see that. And I don't want that to happen to anybody.
That's turned me off to football a little bit, to be honest with you.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, you're definitely thinking, like, they were talking about a guy last night who came back, or yesterday, maybe it was Sunday. They were talking about a guy who came back real quick from two concussions. And you're just sitting there like, that's that being young
it's not a good ending. I don't like seeing these men who give everything they have and they sacrifice their brain. I have a problem with it, and it has soured me a little bit to the game. Right. I'll admit.
What it really is the equipment has gotten too good. The equipment is beyond what the human body can take. And I play a little bit of pickup hockey and stuff, and I got to tell you the equipment that they have now, dude. Like, if you've ever skated and fell on ice with nothing on, dude, it's like jumping out of a car.
Oh,
it's like falling off the hood
it
of a car.
Give.
It's brutal.
Yeah.
It's elbows, knees, back, whiplash, all of that. Well, I guess whiplash can still happen with pads. But when you're wearing all of the pads, dude, the first time you fall down, because
you feel like you're on a bed.
Exactly,
in a pillow
dude. Fight. It's like, it doesn't feel like, you know, you hit something, but the biggest thing, but the great equalizer is your brain.
Yeah.
Because
it's an egg in a shell.
If you fall the wrong way, like I was just mentioning this to Lawhead yesterday on his podcast, where I was playing and, you know, it was one of those deals where I was going forwards and all of a sudden it was a turnover. So, you know, you quickly shift around, but you keep your forward momentum and you bring it back. So I was flying and, you know, I'm not that good, so my skating forward ability is not as
not
good as my skating backwards.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm a pond hockey guy, so now I've just started playing pickup games where you actually have to be able to stick handle a little more properly. And so my momentum, I couldn't handle. I was doing a crossover, something like that, and I just basically, I didn't even hit my head. I fell down on my ass, and then I put my elbows down, and like, it was, you know, as you're falling down like a tree. So my ass hit, and then my elbows hit, and then I stopped my body, and my head just whiplashed back.
That's not a good feeling.
And then the brain slams against the back of the head and then the front of the head, dude. And I was, like, seriously kind of fucked up for a second, and nobody even hit me. So I can't imagine. You know, this is a stand-up comedian. The brain can't handle a stand-up comedian falling skating backwards in a pickup hockey game. Can you imagine the brain handling a professional football player's hit? So I understand the flag in the Saints game, but as a fan of the game, like, and watching the way it was played for so long, it's very confusing. It's like up is becoming down in a way.
Yeah.
And you get that scared old man feeling like everything's changing.
It's true.
It's not the way it was.
Well, as you learn more about stuff, it's like it's kind of like when they're finding that serial killers and certain people have brain damage. They have an amygdala that doesn't flood with the right cortisol and dopamine and things, and they just don't feel.
Slow down. What?
I know.
What?
I'm very intelligent. But as they start to be able to medicalize.
No, but what is that? Is that like some sort of arteries not pumping?
The amygdala is the almond-shaped part of the brain that apparently registers emotions and stuff.
I thought we all have that, and then it builds around it.
But serial killers and people who are really, you know, criminals and stuff like that, a lot of times will have a smaller amygdala, one that doesn't work properly. They just have different brains.
They're basically a lemon if they were a car.
They're a fucking lemon.
Yeah, they're
and
a lemon.
Then that raises the question of what does it
that
say?
That can make decisions.
That's
like Carrie.
Exactly.
She's just shaking her head
over there. Exactly. But it's true. And then, so what does that say about, as you learn more, what does that say about putting them in jail or putting them in the hospital, right? I mean, you know, if you're that fucked up, if your brain's
No, you just
got
to put them down. Like, I think everyone from, like, just
sick dog.
Sociopaths, just you put them down like a rabid dog. Same thing with, like, what they're doing in Vietnam with those corrupt bankers. These guys got caught embezzling $25 million and they're being put to death. And I am 100% for that.
Yeah.
100%. And it doesn't make, does that make us as bad as them? No.
No.
Makes us heroes.
He's an asshole.
It makes you a hero to that old person that fought in a fucking war and earned their money and now has to eat Alpo and go get a fucking job sweeping up McDonald's.
I couldn't agree more.
So this cunt can have a yacht. They should be put down.
I agree with
publicly
you.
In the street wearing a little top hat.
Wearing a Lance
and
Armstrong.
One of those little,
wearing a Lance Armstrong
monocles.
Biker. Why a monocle?
I want them to dress like the Penguin. And they go, wah, wah, wah. And then you shoot them.
And then you shoot them.
Makes them less human.
dehumanize them first.
There you go.
I'm right there with you. A child rapist and those guys. I don't want to pay for their
dude,
fucking...
What could somebody do to you to make you not attracted to what you're already attracted to? Is there something that they could do to make you, like, whatever type of woman you're into? It's like what you're attracted to is what you're attracted to.
I know.
It's how you're fucking wired.
That's right.
It's why it's stupid when people say being gay is a choice.
Right.
It isn't. It's completely natural.
Exactly.
It's how that person is wired and they are reacting to it and they're not fucking hurting anybody.
Exactly.
So leave them alone.
Exactly.
Now, if what you're attracted to is hurting somebody or the way you execute the sexual act, you need to be removed.
Right. You should fucking die.
Yeah. There's only so much fresh water left.
There's a guy who likes to hurt. This guy, my friend's a psychiatrist, and he said he had a guy come in and talk about how he has an urge to hurt animals.
Yeah,
and,
you're done. You're done. You're over.
It's the same thing as, you know, trying to hurt a child and stuff. I don't want you around. I don't want that gene
replicating.
Around.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're
so
done.
Go fuck yourself.
Done.
But you were talking before
and
this.
And I hate about people like that. Is like, well, when you start something like that, then where does it end? I'd say, right, you know, torturing dogs. I think I definitely see a finite end to that.
Yeah. Well, that's what somebody said one time. I said, well, you know, everything is, how do you know it's all contextual? Child abuse? No, it's not. Child abuse is evil, and if you abuse children, go fuck yourself. God, we've solved a lot of problems already on this podcast.
And how are we solving them? With violence.
With violence.
Which I think needs to come back.
With a
when
bullet.
We return.
I got hit as a kid. I mean, I deserved it. It smacked in the ass, and, you know, my mother just couldn't deal
with
it.
What do they call that? What kind of punishment? Corporal? Or?
Yeah, corporal.
Yeah, I had that.
Whatever. My mother took a riding crop to my fucking legs because I would swear, and I was impossible. Fucking impossible. Whack me with a...
Foreshadowing to the small film, that little short film that you saw.
And now this is how I deal.
She should have hit you with one of those director things, one of those director hats or something.
With a ruler.
No, foreshadowing the movie. I fucked up. I thought for a second they had those riding crop things. I realized halfway through it. No, that's a jockey.
My dad gave me a whack because I hit my sister one time. I deserved it. I fucking made my sister cry because I whacked her. My dad goes, "What'd you do? You do this?" And he hit me. And I was like, "He's not a child abuser, but I fucking deserved it." And I have a great relationship with my dad now.
My mother had a paddle that my dad saved from his fraternity days, and she would line all of us up.
Yep.
And just swing away. That was one of my first bits.
Right.
We deserved. I don't look back on any of that punishment with anger.
Me neither.
Ever.
Me neither.
What I look back on with anger is my ability, like the lack of being able to express, you know, I'm not happy. This, you know, like you just had to sit there and shut the fuck up. Like that really, that's sort of, that would be like
That's not what you'll do with your kids, in other words.
Yeah, when you...
You're told to be quiet. It's very Irish, by the way.
Not you. But I've come to the peace of, you know, every generation improves. So what I went through was an improve. Like, you know, you keep the good stuff that your parents did and then stuff that upset you. Hopefully you're viewing it correctly and you're not just selfish and, you know, that you're actually viewing that what that was wrong, right? And then you try to eliminate that. So I just look at... My childhood is that was an improvement on whatever they went through. And then my anger, it's weird. It's like it's gone in my day-to-day life. I don't walk around seething the way I was where I could literally feel my insides like being corrupted.
Because you weren't allowed to express yourself as a kid.
Yeah, but now... It comes out when somebody cuts me off in traffic, I get as that childhood anger comes back and I come off like a fucking maniac. And like, I don't know, as I do more and more specials, like people just sit there and they're like, wow, I'm really surprised that you're like how I'm talking to you right now that I have like they just think I walk around like, what's up with water bottles?
Yeah.
You know? But it is an hour-long commercial of that I'm advertising about myself, so I have no one to blame but me. So.
Yeah, but you know what?
My next special.
Seminal moment for you, I remember when you did the Opie and Anthony thing in Philly, and Eddie Ift had me watch what you did to that crowd. You're like, I ironed my shirt for this, you fucking scumbags, you racist fucks. You got a statue to a boxer. He's not even a real boxer, you racist bastard. I hope you get fucked by a bunch of black guys on your way to your car. I mean, you went off on them, you know, 1 minute.
Right.
That was a huge thing for you, right? A huge bump in sort of popularity, or
I think that was more. That was like a fellows getting props from fellow comics and comedy nerds.
Okay,
and then there was other people that didn't understand it.
When did you
and
notice
they,
it?
They were like, "Oh, he likes getting booed," so I would do shows and people would start
boo you.
To yeah.
Oh God.
Just like they'd pretend to boo me, and then I was supposed to pretend to get mad. And
well, how would you deal with that?
Yeah, however I dealt with it. But there was a second. It was like a second there for like a gig or two where I was like, oh, my God, did I just end my career?
Oh,
did I just turn into, oh, like if I don't come out and smash the watermelon with the hammer,
yeah.
They don't feel like they got a show. But then I realized like, oh, wait a minute. These were big venues. You know, I was on that Opie and Anthony tour where it is. Then I immediately went to the Punchline in San Francisco where you can see to the back of the club. And it's like, wait, I can see you fuckers.
I like the Punchline. Yeah.
But and when you do those, you know, those radio tours, I mean, Opie and Anthony, I mean, they would draw in 10,000 people. So if you're sitting in row fucking Triple H or whatever the hell, you can do whatever you want. You can yell the entire, there's nothing.
It's a
nightmare. I can't see you.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you're sitting on lawn seats. You can be very brave. It's sort of like the halfway point between the comedy club and being on Twitter. You know, the bravery people have on the internet.
It's so true because you can be anonymous.
You really are anonymous.
When did you notice a shift in your, you kind of took a huge jump though in popularity. When was that and why?
No, I think I've had a very gradual.
Oh, yeah?
It's been very incremental, and I have to be honest, it's the only way I could have handled it.
Sure.
Like, I couldn't handle the, you know, I've seen a couple guys have that meteoric rise, and they both handled it well, and I was pretty blown away. Like, wow, man, I don't think.
Who were those guys, Tosh and?
No, I would say watching Dane and Kevin Hart, both of them going up to, like, literally.
I love Kevin. I just did a movie with him.
Like, I opened for Dane one time, and I'm looking up, and I'm looking at, like, a Stanley Cup banner, and I was like, this is fucking insane.
Yeah. Crazy.
This is insane.
And, in a stadium.
And I started out with him, and I'm watching him on stage, and he was way better than he was in the open mic days, but he was still that kid that I met. He was like 19, I think, and I was like 23 when we first ran into each other at this place, Stitches Comedy Club, that doesn't exist anymore in Boston.
Boston.
And it was just sort of like what I got such a kick out of watching him up there, I was just going like, this is essentially the same thing as like when we did like this place, Kelly's in North Reading, the first place I ever bombed. I think it was called Kelly's. I can't remember. But it was just like you're going on a stage and you have your jokes and you're just trying to make people laugh. It's just grown to
just, you know, more people know
mezzanine
you.
Mezzanine and upper deck status.
Crazy.
Yeah, it was really.
But in a way, you pay a
really
price
nuts.
For it. It's not as fun as doing an intimate club sometimes. Like I always find that the bigger the crowd, in some ways, you don't get that same, I don't know, that intimacy. You can kind of, with a really.
Well, that was the brilliance that he did. He put the stage in the middle. Because
right.
I said to him, I go, Dane, what's the fucking deal here? And he goes, dude, he goes, it's just four theaters. It's no big deal. And then that was such a brilliant concept to me. So when you're looking out, it was still, dude, four giant fucking theaters. Jeez. But it's still, you were able to sort of like tackle the problem as opposed to just being like, you know, feeling like you were the sun.
Yeah, yeah.
And the entire, whatever the fucking proper word is, galaxy was going around you. You kind of were able to break it down to.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So crazy. I thought that was a very, and then also for the fan experience, you've now cut off the ring and everybody is closer.
Yeah. And everybody's got
like
PC.
I found his gig easier to do than sometimes I've done gigs with you know, on like some benefits, and there'll be 6,000 people, and they stick the stage all the way to one side,
right?
And you just, it's like you tell the joke, and it's got to go all the way back, and then the laugh has to come, and you have to pace yourself, and it's be one thing if you're doing them every night,
but the laughter's rolling, it kind of rolls,
so it becomes like that thing where you kind of have to like. You got to, like, slow down.
You know, I spoke to about this is, it was one of my highlights of my life. I went backstage to a Springsteen concert and talked to Springsteen for an hour and a half about how he writes songs, the acoustics in a room, why he likes the LA Coliseum way more than the Staples Center, and just how he
Why did he like that better?
Just steel, cement, smaller, more democratic in people get to come in, and if you're a real fan, you'll get closer to the stage. And he's not like, you know, in the Staples Center, he's facing the boxes, you know, like eye level, and the people. It's just, if you have money, you can get a better seat. And he just didn't like that. And at the end of the day, he can feel the music and the audience in a structure that's made of steel and cement. The acoustically, it's just more of an intimate feel. And what was really fun for me is I kind of understood what he was talking about a little bit, because acoustics and rhythm and, you know, those old school. If I go into a lot of times I'll go into a club, and if the nowadays they make them with really high ceilings, I don't like it as much. I like low ceilings.
Are they doing that now?
Yeah, and it reminds me of like New York. I love the low ceiling, like the Comic Strip and those, you know, Stand Up New York, those places that I started in. Where
because then
little rooms.
You can feel the crowd more. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you want? Do you see yourself doing stand up the rest of your life?
Oh, absolutely.
Me too.
I'm a lifer. Me Without too. A doubt, I'm a lifer. I always say I act when they let me, because I don't have any control over whether you're going to pick me or not.
It's true.
So, like, I have a tremendous amount of respect for working actors that they are, and I don't judge any of them when they do a movie that ends up being bad,
right?
Because it's like, A, you got to work. And B, there's also like you have so little control. Like, yeah. What the little acting that I've done.
So many moving parts.
Well, the little acting I've done, what I realize is the words have to be there. You got to have the director, you got to have the editor, and you have to have the proper music and mood underneath it. And yeah. If all of that comes together, like, they're going to make you look unbelievable. Yeah. And that would be Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad. You were on the best show.
All I had to do, dude, was know what they told me to say and then stop where they told me to stop. Just hit my marks, and they made you look like an absolute...
Well,
I got
what?
More acting work because they were so good at their jobs over there.
Well, but you didn't... I didn't see you acting, and that was a big deal. Like, one of the things
It's because I can't.
Well, but that's a hard thing to do, bro. That's a hard thing to do because what you were doing was you were very real. And a lot of people can't do that. In fact, a lot of people go to school for a long time to do that. That's one of the things I noticed. I mean, I've seen every episode, and I think it's the greatest...
to comedy. I can give you the parallel. It's in comedy, okay? What happens in acting, the little I know about it, is you have to block out that you're acting.
Right.
Because what happens is when you start thinking, like what you're doing with your hands there is fucking interesting, okay? But you're not even thinking about that you're doing that. So right. Like when you go to do a scene, like, and if you're eating something, it becomes like, how do I eat this? And that's why, like, I hate watching actors eat, because they overact the act of eating. Mm-hmm. Like, they start pointing with the bread and talking.
They've worked it out.
Yeah. So Nick Kroll did a hilarious short film that kind of touched on that, and I absolutely loved it. It was this gangster thing, and they just kept putting more and more food in their mouths as they were talking, and it was just complete. And they said threatening each other.
He's a silly goose, that guy.
Dude, he's a fucking genius.
Yeah.
And like each the food became more exotic and ridiculous when it was. And I loved it. So I think
that
what you can do in like, and especially in comedy, like if you're in like a comedy, there's like I saw something recently where. There was a scene where a guy, he picked up a condom. He didn't realize it was a condom, and he picked it up, and then he went, ah! And then he threw it to his buddy, and then he caught it, and he caught the thing, and then looked at it like, ah! And he's looking at it going, ah! Like, you wouldn't do that in real life. First of all, the second somebody picks someone and goes, ah! Yes. And throws it at you, the comedy is you getting the fuck out of the
way. That's exactly right.
So, and that
like
plays...
Like it's a bumblebee coming to sting you. You've
that
got,
plays
like, a
way real. So I would try to get the fuck out of the way, and then when it missed me, I would then punch the other guy in the shoulder. Well, don't fucking throw it at me! And that's like...
You're reacting.
Because that shit is... That, to me, is real comedy. Real comedy to me... is watching something that if I was experiencing it, it wouldn't be funny.
Look at Jackie Gleason. Jackie Gleason was not trying to be comic. Jackie Gleason was reacting to a tragedy in his life. Everything was going to shit, and he was about to lose his fucking mind.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like he was joking. When he's saying, Alice, one of these days, I'm right to the moon,
yeah.
He meant it. He's like, I want to fucking hit you so bad, but I can't do it.
Driving him nuts. Like, he would do those looks like, I swear to God.
They called him the gray one. They called him the gray one because he was able to do that. And that's exactly right.
So here's the comedy analogy, because the big, like, the holy grail that is like finding your voice. I got to find my voice. I need to have a fucking point of view. And my argument is when you walk into a club for your first open mic, you already have your voice. And then you go on stage and you lose it because you're going on stage and it's this before you did. Comedy, you were in bars and you were acting shit out and you were making your friends laugh and everything. You were 100% comfortable.
That's right.
You weren't worried about getting heckled or anything. So then now you go onto a comedy stage and all of a sudden there's a mic stand, there's lights on you. It's this completely artificial conversation. So then you go into this, now I am doing stand-up, and then your voice goes away.
Yeah.
And then you spend fucking 8, 10, 12, 16 years trying to get back to being the guy that you were when you came in. And all it is just being comfortable like you were with your friends in the bar. And then your magical point of view, like, what do I think of things? It's like, well, what are you thinking?
Yeah.
The amount of times I've been in a fucking green room and a comic will say something to me, and I'll be like, dude, that is fucking hilarious. You got to do that on stage. And then what do they go? Oh, that's not me. That's not what I do. It's like, dude, that is you.
That is you. You just did it.
Presented the subject. You thought it, Absolutely. And you said it. That is you. That thing you're doing on stage is you doing...
I was just talking
about
this.
You doing stand-up.
I was just talking about this. I said, I don't even try to write funny. I just ask myself questions like, what am I ashamed of? Who am I pretending to be? Who do I wish I was? What am I afraid of? Those are the questions I ask.
That's
and then
it.
Somehow the comedy finds its way through. And somebody said, I used Jeremy Piven in my last special, and he goes, don't you have to warm up? Because I was going to go out there. I go, don't you have to get your head together? I go, bro, I've been doing this long enough, so I just, whatever I'm feeling, I'm going to use.
Right.
I've never, you know, you lose that after a while. That's kind of where you start to arrive at the notion that I think I'm more natural on stage in some ways than I am. If anything, I got to get my energy going. Cause sometimes,
right. Because then you can go.
You get too comfortable.
Yeah, you become you just eating some Raisin Bran.
Exactly. Too fucking lazy. Which is why it's important to keep writing and come up with new stuff all the time.
Yeah, you got to keep it in. I'm trying to make my friends laugh at the bar. You can't be like, wow, everything I say is scootily. It's all funny here. Yeah, no. Then
no
you start
English
eating,
on the ball.
You start eating your ball. Eating your balls, yeah, exactly.
I do that too. I'll write things that I know are going to work, but I'm like, that's a trick. I'm not doing that. I just, you know, or I'll do it and a little part of me dies and I got to go back to being.
I have a great shit joke and I've been doing it and I, for some reason, can't put it in a special, but I really.
You love it?
I love it. And what I love about it too is it's funny without me saying shit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What is the joke? Can you say it or no?
It's basically it's built around the myth of the courtesy flush, and atmosphere and all kinds of things like that, and how to properly do a courtesy flush. I'll do it, but I'm not gonna do. I don't know that I would put that like that, but I don't want to burn the bit here on this
because
it's fun to do, and I'm sitting there, and it's one of the things that I love the most about Chappelle.
Yeah,
is Chappelle will have like some social commentary, and he will follow it up with something as silly,
right,
as like a shit joke and everything, and that's why he's not the political guy, he's not this guy, he's Chappelle.
Right,
like when you go to see Chappelle, you're getting Chappelle.
Well, who are your favorite comics, or who are the ones? Who are the comics that, maybe even who are the actors, who are the comics, who are the writers that kind of, you look up to?
Well, other than the obvious, the comics that...
Yeah, Carlin and those guys, yeah.
Carlin, Kinison was huge for me.
Really?
Kinison was huge for me. During that window where he was becoming famous before he gave into the temptations.
Yeah.
Of being famous.
There's a famous story of Rodney Dangerfield sees him. He's doing blow. He's got this chick on his lap and he's got his shirt open. And Rodney Dangerfield walks in and goes, oh, look, everybody, Nero.
Get that because I don't read.
Nero was basically burned Rome. He was the Roman emperor who was sort of signified the fall of the Roman Empire. He was just debauchery and just fucking murdered people just on a whim and just disgusting and stuck feathers down his throat, threw up and ate more. And he represented everything that was the
appetites.
I bet
that hit home for him. If that's a true story, I bet that hit home for him because he was the guy that took him on, you know, Dangerfield obviously, you know, launched so many guys. But it was what I liked about him, you know, during that window before, you know, before he just was adjusting to being famous, was the honesty and the not afraid of silence and his command of the he had such a powerful voice. And when he got command of it, there's a great YouTube clip of him before he hit. Where I think he's dressed all in black. He's not wearing the hat. He might even have like these black like driving gloves or some shit on. And I love watching it because he's blowing out the screaming. Like my wife's like, oh my God, shut it off. And it's like, no, this is so interesting because what you're watching him is taking it, how far can I take it?
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna dial it back. Like this is like the last. This is like the NFC championship game before he goes to the Super Bowl, and you start seeing him on the danger fields. And he did that thing down at the Roxy, his half hour special or hour, whatever it was. He had such command of it, and then he was just his point of view and he was so unique, the way he and it just unbelievably powerful.
Did you get into this stand-up, trying to be a stand-up?
Another guy I saw before I forget is a guy that passed away. It was a guy, Frankie Bastille. I only saw him one time, and he was the first guy I ever saw just talking on stage.
Frankie Bastille.
Was fucking unbelievable.
Really?
He
never heard of him.
Maron knows him. Talk to Maron about him. Maron knows him. Dude, he was up there, and he did a bit, and I was in Boston. Boston was all set up, punch, rapid fire, you know, just textbook fucking stand-up. Go up there and absolutely level. Fuck the guy next to you. Fuck the headliner that came in from out of town. Yeah. Make him earn it. Like, it was just fucking type A.
You learn how to fucking...
Yeah, yeah. You learn how to kill in Boston. And that's how it was back then anyways. So he was the first guy I saw come in just talking. And he couldn't see the jokes. And he did this joke about how if he wasn't going to be a comedian, he would drive a bread truck. And he just started talking about driving this bread truck, and it was fucking hilarious.
Like sounds already like a great bit.
I didn't even know why, and he was just like, "Yeah, I'd come over that hill in that fucking bread truck," and he just was speaking with such passion.
I got a Frankie Bastille.
Yeah, yeah. There's very down. Little. There's a story I heard about him where, he had a major substance abuse problem and. You should really talk to Maron because Maron knows way more about it than I do. But, you know, one of the rumors I heard, I haven't confirmed it, but, like, he had so had a falling out with everybody. Like, he would stay in, like, the comedy condo, and he would be, like, selling the TV for drugs. They'd come back, and all his shit was gone. So he pissed off so many people.
Some people fuck up so royally. They fuck up so colossally. Yeah. You know
what
I mean?
But this is, like, I so want this to be true. So the story I heard, try to confirm it with Maron. I think I did. I can't remember. But he allegedly, he burned every bridge with every comedy club. He couldn't get any work. And then, he finds out he has cancer. So he calls everybody up. They tell him he has cancer, blah, blah, blah. So they feel bad for him. So they start booking the guy, and he doesn't have long to live. And they're booking and they're booking and booking. And by a year and a half in, they realize that he's not getting sick.
He doesn't have cancer.
He didn't have cancer.
What a dick.
And he was doing the same shit. He was going there and he was doing drugs and he was selling shit out of the condos and borrowing money and not paying people.
Junkies will do anything.
And it took him about a year and a half to figure out this guy isn't getting sick. He's not sick. And I would just love to have been on those phone calls. Club owner's a club owner. Is he coughing? I mean, what is he doing? He fucking come in. The goddamn couch is gone. This guy better be fucking dead by December. I'm not booking him. It's just one of those, great.
That's a classic example of, the kind of fraternity, as a comic.
Yeah.
You'll at least brush up against, you know. It's
but
a
he
rare
was,
thing.
Dude, he was, I mean, stumbling around the club, knocking over chairs, literally movie high.
Yeah.
Is that an act? And he was that fucking gone. And he went up there, dude. And it was just like, he just captivated the whole room. I remember we was at the Comedy Connection and when it was at Faneuil Hall and there was, it was on a Tuesday or Wednesday night and there wasn't a lot of people there. And it was like everybody else was doing this one thing and he was doing this other thing. And the show just went vertical and just went right out into space. It was that much of a technological. We were all Kitty Hawk, just sitting there pedaling a fucking plane up there doing our little bits. And he went there and it just was super
sonic. So inspiring when you see that stuff.
It was, and I remember that. Maron was another guy. I remember there was sets that burned in my brain.
Well, Mark was always just so smart. I remember watching Mark literally 20 years ago and he was just painfully funny and smart. He would just come up with stuff.
I saw him at the New York Comedy Club. I still remember a set he did there. I saw Joe Rogan in Aspen where I fucked up your intro a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's cool.
That one burned into my brain.
Oh, when Rogan did that, he used to do that tiger. That tiger bit, I want to be a tiger. You ever see that?
Oh, my God. That was insane.
He used to destroy rooms. I wasn't even doing stand-up then. I was just trying to be a fucking actor.
It's one of the greatest performance pieces. He sounds like a fucking tiger.
Oh my God.
And then
I'll show you a video on my phone of him fucking being a bear and a Rottweiler. It's the craziest thing you've ever seen. His ability, nobody knows this about Rogan, his ability to do characters and accents and animals is part of
it. It's insane.
Yeah.
And insane. And when he gets in and doing that, that's that, he has that Kinison level power.
Yeah.
Who else did I see? I saw, who was that fucking? I've been doing this so long, man. I
know.
I just, there was a lot that I saw. When I had this advantage, the headliners would come through. Regan came through.
He was great.
Oh my God!
But what for
was
you?
Was great. He still is.
Yeah, he's great.
Still is.
But for you, you know, you get to a point with stand-up where you get so in touch with what you're doing, and writing becomes easier in a way. Just in that you just tap into what you're thinking about, and you develop, you trust yourself more, and you can come up with bits, and you're trying them out.
Right.
But do you think that challenge, or do you think that will that you'll need more? Is there something you want to do? Like, you ever think about? I don't know. My idea is always to try to be as original as I can, surprise myself, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just find if you're living, like people think to get better is just 100%. I got to get on stage. I think that's true when you're younger, when you're getting new to it. But then there becomes you have to flesh out a life. You got to go away from it for a little bit. I learned that from Patrice. Patrice would take time off. He would take big chunks of time off. We used to give him shit. The only guy needs a 6-week vacation from a 5-week vacation, you know? He just wouldn't come around, and he would come back and wouldn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
He's the best I ever saw.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know Patrice, but he sat me down with Dove Davidoff one time and spoke about his philosophy on how to deal with women. And it was very interesting, man. There was a lot of truth to it. He was a very smart guy.
That's, you know, all of what you're saying is like beyond an understatement.
Yeah.
Beyond an understatement.
Yeah, I didn't know him too.
Yeah, he was an experience, that guy. But
speaking of which, by the way, I don't know if you're doing November 29th and 30th, but you should come to Utah to Wise Guys because I'm doing stand-up there.
Oh, I heard about that.
Yeah.
So that was in the trades this morning.
Yeah.
You know?
The people kind of freak out. I was rated.
They were going to put Tom Cruise on the front. They're like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah. Callan is.
I know.
He's in Utah.
The Vatican picked up the story, and it's crazy.
Are they still offended, or have you guys?
I'm a saint now, which is so weird. I didn't ask for it, but I'm the saint of comedy or whatever.
And you
got to
show up for that ceremony.
Yeah, and the Mormons now are like, come to Wise Guys in November 29th and 30th. I'm not promoting the date. I just know I'll be there. And if you want to come by and see what I'm doing.
Well, you've always been
an
ambassador.
Thank you.
For comedy.
I appreciate that. I hear that. I don't want that weight on my shoulders.
You stay at the Embassy Suites?
I do stay there. I book my own fucking hotels now, actually. It's worth spending the extra money. And I rent a car and I drive
around.
Well,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, where are you next? Where are you going? Where can the people see
I'm in Gunwaven, New Haven, as they call it.
Gunwaven, New Haven. What are you doing, a theater?
Yeah, I don't know what it is offhand. It's this Saturday. I'm going to the Harvard-Yale game because I want to know who the next four presidents are going to be. And then I have this fucking awesome tour, 9 cities, 9 countries going through Europe.
No kidding.
Yep, starting in London and I end up in Iceland, go as far as Helsinki.
Amazing. Isn't it funny how you have fans overseas now?
Yeah, well, I've worked it, dude. I've gone over there a number of times. I read their emails and shit as much as I can.
Really? Try to where have you gone? You started developing these.
I've toured Scandinavia.
How is Scandinavia?
Helsinki.
You do stand up. They get everything?
Yeah. It's great. Yeah. My fault. When I go over there, I just act like I'm here. Yeah. I did that whole like mind fucking myself on stage. Like, I was in England and I got panicked. Do they have squirrels here? I panicked. It turns out we have bigger, more aggressive squirrels, and they have these little red ones, little ginger squirrels. But they know what a squirrel is.
The Brits love their comedy, and they're great audiences.
Oh, they're
right?
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah, and then I love Scotland and Ireland. Like, those, like,
yeah.
I feel like London is like Manhattan. This is my little knowledge, and I feel like when I go to Ireland and Scotland, like, those are the guys I grew up with.
That's right.
Like, you just want to go out drinking,
you know?
And they're funny as fucking hell.
Yeah.
And,
Are you 100% Irish?
No, I'm actually mostly German.
Okay.
I'm German, Irish, Scottish.
All the and, you don't tan well is the point. Then, you don't tan properly.
And I have very little tolerance for human beings.
That's Bill Burr, ladies and gentlemen.
I have my own philosophies.
I love it.
I have my final solutions.
You're a breath of fresh air.
I talk to them. Yeah, I have my final solutions for bankers and pedophiles.
Yeah.
You know?
Not a bad thing. I think I think I see eye to eye with you on all that stuff.
But if that philosophy runs wild, then I get caught up in that fishnet.
You gonna have kids?
Yeah.
We shouldn't talk about that. You
should.
Don't want freaks.
I should. I should have a kid.
Well, you're the man.
You know what I mean?
I appreciate you coming on the.
I need something to blame.
Will you you come back every day?
If I ever have a kid and he takes that sound bite, it'll just, with the technology, you'll be able to pull it out of the air.
Well, I'm writing.
Really, Dad?
I write
what about
bit.
This? And he just moves his index finger.
I write a bit about my daughter not being a good dancer, and she's five. And, it, you know,
don't do
it
that.
Kills. I know. And the thing is, do I put it on my special? It's just, it's
who's
contextual.
A good dancer at five? Michael Jackson?
I know, exactly. But it's funny. The way I do it is funny. But you
little
know,
baby
just,
James Brown?
I spend a lot of time staring at my kids and being their audience. That's important. I think that, you know, it goes back to what you were talking about.
And then what, you write like a New York Times review
of what they just did? Of what they just did. No, I think it's important
my
to be daughter, seen.
My daughter, woefully miscast and eating cereal.
Woefully. I love the way the New York Times is just so incredibly politically correct with their language.
But I like them as far as like when you open that page and they have like a little blurb about around the world, like before the internet, you could just go do that. I loved that aspect.
I read the New York Times every day.
Oh, I don't.
That's how I keep my edge. You didn't know who Nero was, so obviously you're not a big
Listen,
Roman
if you don't have a good sports though. Page, you're not a newspaper in my world. If I can't just flip it over.
You're straight up Sox Patriots fan, right?
Bruins, yeah, I'm all the Boston stuff. I'm mainly a
That's why you knew who Steve
Bruins.
Rogan was.
I'm a mainly Bruins is the number one. I'm loving the Patriots this year because we're
working with scraps.
Yeah, and Tom Brady is having one of his greatest years, and all these idiots on like ESPN and these places are like, oh, last year he threw for this, and now he's got that. Yeah. It's like, dude, look what he's throwing to.
He's such a
he
winner.
He is willing this team
it's incredible.
To fucking win. And they keep thinking, like, when people beat the Patriots, they're beating this Super Bowl team. The only guys with rings left, I think, are Belichick and Brady.
I know.
Everybody else is
but
gone.
But why'd they get rid of Welker? Explain that to me.
Well, they already, I wasn't there, but they had already had a falling out. Like, he got sour when, I remember a few years ago when we gave him the franchise tag. And then, you know, he got disciplined before the Jets game because he made all those feet jokes about
right.
Rex Ryan.
Right.
And I think it was, I think if I had to guess, you know, I mean, it usually does come down to money, but those types of things didn't help. But there's a lot of Patriot fans that are sitting there going, you know, oh, we should have kept him and this, that, and the other thing. And I had a buddy, my Forrest Shaw, comedian, made a great point, was saying, well, he was never the guy that they keyed on. So he would have been the number one receiver. You know, if a guy like Sherman goes up against Welker, I mean, come on.
It's true.
So he was able to.
He was just that gnat, that thorn in your side. What about Welker? Where the fuck is
Well, dude,
you know?
I got to tell you, like, I don't think that guy, and this has nothing to do with his game because he should be in the NFL. I don't think that guy plays in the NFL in the 80s. There was no place for him. The way the rules of passing were and what you could do as a corner and his size and everything.
You mean he would have gotten creamed?
They would have beat him up.
Wow.
They would have beat him up. And
that's interesting. That's a very interesting point.
Yeah, well, that's the thing now. Like, when this, like, he broke one of Jerry Rice's records. This is how much the game has changed.
It's crazy.
He broke a record that was like, I think it was the most 14 yard,
yeah.
No, 14 catches in a game or something like that.
Well, he was just always out and those button hooks and all those.
Exactly. Yeah. And he did it. He beat Jerry Rice. Jerry Rice's career yards are like 21,000. Welker caught up to him only catching like 8,500 yards worth of passes. He broke a Jerry Rice record, and they're going, I'll tell you, any time you get mentioned in the same sentence with Jerry Rice, you gotta, well, that's really saying something. What it's really saying, and I'm not, like, Welker is the shit, but I'm just saying is the way the game has changed. They went from 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and now they throw 3 yard passes.
Yeah, you're right.
So all of these Dan Marino records are going by the amount of guys that are now going to throw for 50,000 yards or 60,000, and people
just different offense,
and
different.
People are going to say that, you know, forever, like Dan Marino is like this whipping boy because he never won a championship. The guy had no fucking defense. And go look up his running backs: Tony Nathan, Delvin Williams, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the football player. Okay, like he was a one man band.
He
came out there with the cymbals between his knees and the big bass drum. He had to do the whole
who's
fucking
your, who's
thing.
Who's your favorite athlete of all time?
Favorite
quarterback all time.
Favorite quarterback all time.
The one guy you choose on your all-star team.
Dan Marino, I defend the most of all time. My favorite quarterback of all time, I just absolute winner and got it done, I would say Joe Montana.
Okay. I hear that a lot from real. Best basketball player of all time, Michael Jordan.
Jordan.
Yeah. Second best?
Well, I'm not as read up on that in the 60s and to really know the impact of those guys. I mean,
you get these violent debates. Bill Russell and everybody freaks out.
Yeah, Bill Russell. I would say as far as individual player, I would go Kobe Bryant. But as far as a team player, Kobe drops tremendously. Like, he's this weird thing where it's like he's awesome and a cancer all at the same time. Like, driving Shaq out of town.
If you could be a pro athlete,
dropping his name to the cops, walking off the court during losses, none of that, like, all of that, and that stuff just breeds resentment.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck how many points you have. So, but he's also, like, I mean, the drive that that guy
it's
has
incredible.
And how much he gives a shit and how much he wants to win. Like, I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. Just his behavior, his interpersonal skills are fucking horrific.
Yeah.
But his one-on-one.
This goes back to Lance Armstrong and how we started this fucking podcast.
Well, maybe he should ride a bike.
Maybe he should ride a fucking bike. But well, let me ask you this. If you could be a pro athlete of one sport, what would it be?
Well, judging the fallout of these, you know, football players, that's going to be out. I love them all, dude, but I maybe a hockey. I just think hockey's the coolest sport because it's underground. It's
really?
Like, it's like liking that band that hasn't made it yet.
Yeah.
You know, I love that people can't see the puck. I love that they don't understand why they fight. Like, I love that. It's like, good, just watch your Olympic hockey and then come at me and tell
me. It's a little bit like stand-up, isn't it? I mean, where you get people are like, oh, The Hangover is the funniest movie in the world. Yeah, but if you come to see like a really good stand-up comic, you'll laugh way harder than you did in The Hangover. Way harder.
You know when I realized that? When I went to go see Something About Mary and it was the scene where she puts his fluids in her hair.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in this packed audience and they were laughing like the laughs I hear in a comedy club. And I remember sitting there going like, wow, this must be what it's like to sit in the crowd at a comedy club to laugh like
that. I say my friends I got a group of friends that can make you laugh so much harder than any movie you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yet,
not
it's
to say
harder.
The Hangover is not funny. It's,
no,
it's
a
different thing.
Different thing.
You're telling a story.
It's a different thing. Well, we got to wrap this up, but I want to thank Bill Burr, the great Bill Burr, for doing this.
Thank you.
The,
you know, my tolerance of you.
I know.
Was really went away
done.
About 20 minutes ago. So
listen, it's a privilege.
I
to
kept
talk
trying to
you.
Give you a signal there to wrap it up.
I was just hoping we could be friends. you're the man, pal. Thank you. Bill
right,
Burr,
right
ladies and gentlemen.
Right back at you.
Bill Burr.
Go see him in Utah.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show. Be sure to visit briancallen.com for information about this episode as well as past and future episodes. You can follow Brian on Twitter at Brian Callen and like him on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Brian Callen Comedy. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.